This is Australia Remembers tape number 11. This is an interview with Mr. Alan Thom, THOM, of Lang Lang, recorded on the 16th of October 1995.
My name's Alan Thom. I'm 71 years old. I now live at Lang Lang, Victoria. When the war joined up, I was working on a dairy farm at Lee and Gather by the name of a person called George Guither had been to the Boer War and had had one leg amputated below the knee. I worked there for about 5 or 6 months, and then I went up to a place, Keewar, Tangambalanga, and I worked on a couple of dairy farms. I'd signed up for the Navy when I was 17, but unfortunately I was unable to get all my medical exams passed. So just about a few days after I turned 18, I got the Army notice to report to the drill hall in Albury on the 9th month of the 1st, 1942. In actual fact, my birthday's on the 12th of December, so on the 17th of December, and I was in on the 9th, so I didn't have long to get into the Navy. We were trained at Bungala for the start, then we were taken to a place called Warwick in Queensland and did further training there. And in fact, one of the things they were testing people for, with a full pack, we marched from Warwick to Toowoomba, which was over 60 miles. Out of 130, I think there was about 9 of us completed that test. We also did training at Southport, Marysborough, Caloundra. One stage part of the Menzies magic line across Australia. The
Brisbane line.
The Brisbane line, yes. Then I transferred over to the Navy, and I was called into the Navy on the 31st, the 3rd, 43. I did training at Flinders Naval Base for 6 weeks. I was then sent to Thursday Island for about 18 months or 19 months, which time I served on I did depot duty and worked with a diesel mechanic, and then later I went out on small ships as what they called the driver, that was looking after the diesel on the motor. Our jobs there were to go around the various islands and supply. They had outposts on it was Tuesday Island, Wednesday Island, and I'm not sure, it might have been Friday Island. They had outposts there. They didn't have radar, so they just had the people out there with radio, and if the planes came, well, then it was their job to signal in to let them know that the planes were on the way. I also went on known as a fair mile from Merauke in the southwest coast of New Guinea. I was flown up there to relieve a person that he had compassionate leave for some reason. And I went on the fair mile there, and our job was going around the different outposts there. The Army had men signallers away out camping out in the native huts, and it was once again their job was, if they saw planes coming, that they signalled back to Merauke. Merauke was a pretty big American air base, and then they would counter the planes coming. On one of those outposts, there was at one time, well, they just had their radio and a few guns and 303s and Thompson machine gun and a couple of Japanese landing craft came down. And they weren't ashore, and when they weren't ashore, the Australians very quickly scattered back into the forest, and they treated the Fuzzy Wuzzies very well, so they didn't tell the Japanese that they were there. And then when the Japanese got back on their boats and started to go, then they opened fire on them. The first one they fired at was one fella in white clothing, because they thought he was looked as if he was the head of the patrol. They immediately got onto Meraki and they set up the bombers, and well, they destroyed the bombers, destroyed the landing craft. Then about two or three days later, they knew that they knew they'd sunk the craft, but the natives started coming back in with clothing and rifles, etc. When I was finished that particular lot, I came back to Thursday Island. I was put on the boat again, small craft, and I got very sick. I was put in hospital and I was delirious. And I was in there for about a week and nobody knew what I had. And a passing doctor came through and he decided that I'd had malaria. And on Thursday Island, none of the doctors had encountered it. He came from up New Guinea and he knew what it was within a couple of days or so of having the tablets. I was, well, on the men, fit as a fiddle again. After a certain time then, came home on leave and was posted to the Hobart. And
what was the situation of the war like at that stage?
Oh, well, the Japanese, when I was in New Guinea on that patrol boat, then they started to turn, the Japanese were starting to be defeated, well, defeated. By the time I got on the Hobart, well, they were doing the bombardments, etc., on the various islands.
Right.
And we did bombardments at Balikpapan, Brunei, Labuan, and I don't know, there was another one too. But, and anyway, finally then, well, we went into Manila too, and just a few days after they'd surrendered, and they hadn't really cleaned the place up, but when we went in, then when the peace was signed, we went the whole fleet, went up to Japan. Well, you'd have Jack's got the number of ships there that were in that peace signing.
So where did you actually go to in Japan? Which island?
We went into Yokohama.
Uh-huh.
And from there we could go on leave, we could go up to catch the train and go to Tokyo, and they also at one stage gave us about a week's leave and they said let us go to an inland place called Nikkei. It was up in the mountains. We also went by down to Kure, I think it was, and they took us by train and bus to see Hiroshima.
What was that like?
Oh, well, it was just total devastation. It's just nothing. It was just absolutely amazing. But the destruction that just one bomb could do. But
what did you think of Tokyo at that stage?
Oh, well, it was very, very heavily bombed. But there were quite a few of the streets that hadn't been really destroyed. But over in there at that time, most of the buildings, the houses were made of timber, and they would just be like a pack of ants, and they'd build a house within a few days. But I suppose in my life I had two very lucky escapes. When I was in the army, I trained with went up in New Guinea. A lot of them were killed. The fellow that took my place on the Bren gun, he was killed, a bloke by the name of Red Juices. Our sergeant was killed. In the company there was two of the corporals were killed. The Lance Corporal was shot through both wrists. Would have been my fate if I'd have stopped in the army. Another time in the Navy, probably wasn't anything really traumatic, but we were on a ship and a small boat, and we were supposed to be going from Thursday Island out to assist with picking up mines, helping a minesweeper. Our job was to put a marker on each end as the minesweeper swept the mines up. We only left Thursday Island. We had a new skipper that they sent up. I think he was a solicitor from Sydney, and he apparently had his own yacht, was in the yacht club. And he didn't know too much about navigation, obviously, but anyway, we left Thursday Island just on dusk. And anyway, we hadn't gone very far at all, and he signalled back to say that he found the compass was 2 degrees out, and would he turn back? And they said, no, if you know the compass is 2 degrees out, keep going. Well, it was a pretty rough night for a small boat, and it was as black as black. Well, I'd been on this boat for quite a long time. We'd never had any problem with the motor at all, and it stopped. And anyway, luckily they were able to get an anchorage. And anyway, I went down. I had to work on the motor, and well, I knew what was wrong, what would be wrong. And after an hour and a half, I got the motor going. And anyway, I said to the skip, well, the motor's going. Like, do you want to carry on? And he said, no, we've got an anchorage. We'll stop here. It worked out. Next morning, the leading hand came to me and said, thank God that motor stopped, because we're heading straight for a big reef on an island. So we've probably been gone that night. But then we got out to the mines and started with the sweeper. And the next thing, there's the signals flying everywhere. The silly cow was driving straight over the top of the minefield, but thank God we didn't draw enough water to be blown up. But that was, well, those were just a couple of the experiences that I had.
And what was your job when you got to the Hobart?
I was in the boiler room. I was in the boiler room.
What was that work like?
Oh, it's very hot. There's boilers on one side and boilers on the other. And I think there was four boilers, I think it was. I'm not exactly sure. There four or six, four, I think it was. But you worked under pressure. They had to pump air down to keep the fire in the boiler. If the air pressure got too weak, you'd get a black flash, which would burn you. And it was very, very hot in the tropics, but Well, we used to work, I think, about 20 minutes, then we're allowed up top for 10 minutes.
It was that hot that you couldn't stay?
It's very, very hot down the boiler room, yes. Yeah.
How many men on the ship?
Oh, I think normally it started off at about 1,100 when I went on it. By the time the ward finished, it was nearly 1,300, because that was due to the fact that they were getting that much radar, and each lot of radar they put on it, there'd be another crew come on with the radar. And so that we weren't so bad, because the stokers, we were in what you call a mess. We all lived down in the one quarter. And but the seamen, they were really crowded out. But it was a good life. The fellowship on board ship was very good, yes.
How long were your shifts?
4 hours. You do, well, there's 4 hours. There's morning, afternoon, and dog watch. That's 8 to 12. You'd have 8 hours on and 4 hours off, but it's... it used to be pretty hard when you were out at sea, but if you came off the dog watch from 12 to 4, near 12 to 4 was the dog watch, well then, you know, you just get to bed and the next thing they'd be getting up, well then the people on that shift, you'd have to wash the dish and clean up and then try and go to sleep if you could. And sometimes if the guns were firing and that, well, that was just about an impossibility if they were doing a bombardment. But the captain on the ship, though, when we went into action, though, just about every night he'd splice the main brace and you'd be allowed a bottle of beer each to celebrate the day's work. But anybody, if you've got bottle beer off another person or that, and you became inebriated, there was no questions asked, you went straight up into the brig, straight into jail. So you didn't have too much to drink. I think that's about all I can tell you.
So how long was it then after being in Japan before you got back and were demobilised?
The ship was still in Japan, actually, when I was demobilised. And they came back a couple of months or so afterwards. I can't have that date.
And how did you get back then?
Oh, they sent me back on an English ship. We came back to Sydney and back down to Melbourne. And we went to Port Melbourne then and handed our what gear we had to, our hammock and blanket. Oh, yeah. Just a few items like that. We all, in the Navy, everybody, you're issued with a uniform, and I think we were allowed about 9 pence a day, and we had to keep our uniform up to date. They didn't issue any other items, you had to buy them, but you could buy them through the Navy. We used to, mainly our good suits, we used to get tailor-made for ourselves. Then when I came down to change over, I came down to the Caulfield race course from the Army to hand my gear in then.
Oh, right.
Then I was given leave to go home for a couple of weeks until the Navy told me to report to Flinders.
Yeah. And did you ever have the malaria again?
Oh, I might have had slight goes of it, but nothing serious. I was pretty lucky, I think, compared to that. I'd had dengue fever. Well, everybody got those things. dysentery. Mm-hmm. When we're in the army, we got dysentery shocking at one stage. Even the doctor himself had it, so.
And this is while you're still in Queensland, is it?
That was while we were in Queensland. We got the dysentery and, yes, dengue fever, but there was no malaria up that way then.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, I don't think so.